Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, a German medical school returns remains of Herero people to Namibia. We ask why Germany is unwilling to use the term genocide when referring to its colonial past.
There is no expiry date on genocide, and the victims could come up with demands for compensation.
And further setbacks in efforts to end the conflict in South Sudan.
It was our hope that we would come back to our people with peace. But unfortunately, things did not go as planned.
Just two of our stories in this edition of Africa Link. Stay tuned.
Top story.
On Wednesday, Berlin's Charité Medical School handed over 3 complete skeletons and 18 skulls to a delegation from Namibia. The remains are more than 100 years old and date back to the time of repressive German colonial rule. The Herero and Nama ethnic groups had rebelled against their German colonial masters, and the uprising was brutally put down. Tens of thousands were killed. Historians call it genocide, but successive German governments have steadfastly declined to use that term, let alone contemplate reparations. Michael Scaturo was present at the handover ceremony.
I'm standing inside a 19th century wood-paneled lecture hall in Berlin's Charité Medical School. Diplomats and members of the German African community are assembled here to remember atrocities committed by the German colonial government in Southwest Africa, today's Namibia. Jerry Ikanjo of the Namibian government delivers this speech.
The government of the Republic of Namibia stands firmly with the descendants of all the victims of these truly horrific crimes. These crimes have been recognized globally as the first genocide of the 20th century.
Namibia's ambassador to Germany, Neville Goertze, said the ceremony represents a step forward in German-Namibian relations.
Well, it is absolutely part of our ongoing efforts to do justice to the legacy of the people who have succumbed in this colonial history of our countries. This is a step that will be followed by more steps.
Germany had a low-key representation at the event, and the main official, Ambassador Egon Koch-Anke, declined to talk to the media after delivering a speech. But Afro-German rights groups were not pleased with Wednesday's ceremony. Mochta Kamare was one of those people.
What did you want to hear today from these people, the German representatives?
I want that what the minister of Namibia say very clearly is that it was a genocide. But because the German government don't to use this war. The German government speak about war victims, but they never speak about genocide. We want that the German government very clearly and tell it is genocide and to pay reparation for the victim.
In 1904, the Nama and Herero peoples revolted against German colonization. In response, German colonial forces created a plan to eradicate them. Some 80,000 people were killed in 4 years, and hundreds of skulls were taken to Berlin for eugenics research. The head of the National Museum of Namibia, Esther Mombola-Goagoses, is worried that Germany is trying to ignore what she says was clearly genocide.
We also wish that the history of what the then German government done should be made known to the youth of Germany of what happened, because that's the only way people can reconcile and know.
But German students in the audience today say they do want to learn about the past. I spoke to 19-year-old Frida.
One of the things I've heard talking to students around Germany is that they never really learned about the colonial.
Right.
Is this true?
Yeah, that's true. Only in the 10th grade, I think, we somehow talked very, very bit about and not very detailed. So I've do this for my own.
Was there a discussion about the genocide when you were learning about it?
No. Only about, they murdered many people.
Well, would you think it should be part of the curriculum?
Oh yeah, of course. It must be, because it's a current debate, so it should be.
Germany's foreign ministry stressed in a statement that ever since Namibia's independence in 1990, Berlin has expressed Germany's historic, political, and moral responsibility. That included deep regret for the events of the colonial war of 1904 to 1908.
Michael Scaturo in Berlin. Let's examine this story a little more closely and also fill in more of the background. To put Wednesday's events into context, I called Henning Melber, a German political scientist specialising in Namibia. How significant was the handover of these remains, both for Germany and Namibia?
Actually, it should be similar significant for both sides, but I'm afraid that it's much more significant for the Namibian side, for the Herero and the Nama side, than it is for the German side. The German side is very reluctant to recognize what happened 110 years ago as a genocide, even despite the fact that a UN report already years ago, which looked into genocide of the 20th century, described the actions against the Herero and Nama in what was then called German Southwest Africa as the first genocide of the 20th century. Now, for the Namibians, it's important, and literally speaking, it's the skeletons coming out of the closet. This is now the second transfer of skulls back to Namibia. The first happened 1.5 years ago, and it ended in a huge embarrassment because the German side was desperate to downplay the symbolic relevance of the act and avoided an official apology for the genocide.
Why does the German government shy away from the term genocide in this particular context?
Well, first of all, the admission of genocide might lead to demands for compensation. So there's a reluctance to admit to genocide because there is no expiry date on genocide and the victims could come up with demands for compensation. I think it's a much more wider issue, because if Germany would do that, it would be a precedence where other colonial powers who committed genocides all over the world in the colonial era would be under pressure to come up with similar recognitions. It's a speculative thing, but I assume that the Germans are actually advised from other European countries not to recognize the act of genocide. And that is also why in 2004, the then minister from the Social Democratic and Green Coalition government attended the 100th-year ceremony of the battle in Namibia, but did not explicitly offer an apology, but asked for forgiveness. And when asked, she said that was an apology, but legally speaking, as others pointed out, it was not in legal terms an apology.
Can you see any future German government adopting a different stance on this issue?
It's interesting that a year ago there were two drafts discussed in the German Bundestag, the one by the Left Party and the other one by the Social Democratic and Green Party. And both went much further than anything any government before had adopted as an official line. The only difference was that the Left Party asked also for compensation, and the other submission by the Social Democratic and the Green Party stopped short of that, but also asked for an official apology. So now one of those two parties is in the Great Coalition government. And actually, it's a very interesting question to the Social Democratic coalition partner in that government, how much they are loyal to the submission they had put to the Bundestag a year ago.
German political scientist Henning Melber.
Africa Link, every weekday on Deutsche Welle.
United Nations diplomats are to begin hammering out the details of a peacekeeping plan for the Central African Republic on Thursday, hoping to restore order to the strife-torn country. UN Secretary-General Ban Ki-moon has recommended deploying a 12,000-strong force to the former French colony. There may be a broad consensus that a peacekeeping mission is inevitable, but agreement on fine details is a long way off. However, for the people of the Central African Republic, even a short delay would mean yet more uncertainty and danger. A report by Simona Schlintfein, presented by Susan Holton.
Every day, bands of youths known as anti-Balaka attack Muslims, while in the north, Christians are attacked by the Muslim Seleka Alliance. In the capital, Bangui, the Red Cross collects a dozen corpses every day. Some have been hacked to death with machetes, others burned alive. In Bangui, Muslim and Christian districts are located close to each other. Sometimes it's just a handful of African Union soldiers who serve as a buffer between the Christian anti-Balaka youth militia and Muslim civilians. Numerous barracks serve as jails for rebels of the Muslim Seleka group. At the entrance to a barracks in northern Bangui, just 5 Rwandan soldiers of the AU force are on guard to prevent the Seleka fighters escaping. Some 6,000 soldiers from surrounding countries are now stationed in the Central African Republic as part of the AU MISCA mission. Another 2,000 French troops were sent under a UN mandate. A further 1,000 are to come from the European Union. But residents in Bangui still do not feel safe. In the Muslim areas, people are scared to even go for the usual Friday prayers. "Not a single patrol has been seen in the district all morning," complains a Muslim resident. Others accuse the French of supporting the Christian militias.
"We live in terror here. Every day the anti-Balaka attack. We were told that the French are here for us, but we are still being attacked. At least with the MISCA troops, we have the feeling that they want to protect us. We congratulate the soldiers from Burundi. They are doing their job."
There is considerable distrust of foreign troops from certain countries. The Muslims in Central African Republic accuse soldiers from Cameroon and Congo, but also from France, of following their own interests and supporting the Christian militias. Soldiers from Burundi and Rwanda are regarded as trustworthy. The latter have therefore been deployed mainly in Muslim districts. Cameroon's army is in the Borab district, which is close to ousted President François Bozizé. He is said to be mobilizing the youth gangs from his exile in Cameroon. On the other side, the MISCA troops from Chad are considered as siding with the Seleka rebels. To say the international troops are neutral mediators is far from the truth. This is why it is necessary to have troop contingents from UN countries which have no direct interest in the conflict. In a report to the UN Security Council, Secretary-General Ban Ki-moon has called for the deployment of 12,000 peacekeepers. Leah Koyasum Dumta, Vice President of the Central African Parliament, welcomes the request.
"It was a great relief to hear that the Secretary-General has called for peacekeepers to be mobilized. In our country, the army no longer exists. The UN Blue Helmets can assure the population that the country is in a state of transition so that elections can soon be held. It is a great relief for us as members of the transitional parliament that the requests made by our president have been heard by the Secretary-General, and we thank him."
Ban Ki-moon also said that the troops would only arrive in September at the earliest.
A report by Simona Schlintfein, presented by Susan Holton.
Behind the headlines.
In Nigeria, according to the Reuters news agency, more than 150 civilians have died in attacks attributed to the Islamist group Boko Haram over the last 5 days, adding to the 300 killed last month. Behind the headlines, the insurgency is also blocking essential cross-border trade between Nigeria and northern Cameroon. The Nigerian military closed the border because it believes the insurgents are using the country as a safe haven for the launch of their lethal raids on Nigeria. On the Cameroonian side, huge quantities of rice, onions and other goods are stockpiling and cannot be sent to Nigeria. And key Nigerian shipments, such as fuel, are failing to arrive in Cameroon, raising fears that people will soon be going hungry. From Yaoundé, Moki Kinseko reports.
I am here at the border town of Amchide. It's known for its intensive cross-border trade with Nigeria. But businessman Mokom Neville tells me activities have lost momentum for 2 weeks now.
My brother, ever since Boko Haram become attack we for here...
My brother, ever since these Boko Haram people attacked us here, everything is at a standstill. Look at those walls. Bullets penetrated into them and there are wounds everywhere. Look over there, you will see Nigerian soldiers. Since they came here, they have been stopping us from crossing, so we can no longer sell. We do not know what to do.
Both the Cameroonian and Nigerian soldiers on their respective sides of the border look nervous. The Nigerian military was deployed there in mid-February to stop Islamist extremists using the porous border zones between the two countries to prepare attacks. Fuel vendor Mustafa Bakari says this has had disastrous consequences, not only for merchants, but also for people in North Cameroon.
Fuel is now very expensive. A liter now costs 600 CFA francs. Customers are refusing to pay, so it's no longer a profitable business.
The only currency exchange market that serves traders between the two countries has also run out of activity. Njotu Sule, who makes a living out of it, told me that business is at a standstill.
We do currency exchange from the CFA franc used in Cameroon to the Nigerian naira and vice versa. But for some time now, we do not have customers.
But now people know you come.
Fungot Edwin, a senior customs officer, told me that their staff in the area are finding it difficult to meet their revenue targets. The government of Cameroon has, however, provided them with weapons to defend the territory from any possible Boko Haram threat.
We recently had a good chunk of very modern war weapons because of the phenomenon from our neighboring country. When you see a Kalashnikov, those are some of the best guns you find around anywhere in the world.
Here at the Amchide Motor Park, I was told that transport fares had increased by up to 70% due to fuel scarcity. Shoe vendor Haliru Kakoi says such an increase is unprecedented in his 11-year stay at Amchide.
Everything is becoming expensive. The price for a pair of slippers has doubled, and so no one wants to buy. Nothing is moving here.
The situation is bad for both countries. Huge quantities of agricultural produce are now piled in Cameroon because of the sealed borders. Businessman Dame Jean-Pierre fears for the future.
I believe that in the days ahead there will be serious food shortages in the north of Cameroon. We are expecting disastrous consequences since we can no longer import. Added to that, onions cultivated here can no longer be exported, so farmers are becoming poorer and poorer.
That report was compiled by Moki Kinseko. At least five troops were killed in fighting between soldiers over salaries at a barracks in South Sudan's capital Juba on Wednesday. The latest flare-up did not appear to be between government and rebel forces, but it does highlight the tension that persists in the army. Meanwhile, peace talks between the government and the rebels in Addis Ababa have collapsed. James Shimanyula reports.
The collapse of the peace talks come at a time when fighting in South Sudan entered its 11th week. Government troops and rebel forces, loyal to fugitive former Vice President Riek Machar, have continued to battle despite a cessation of hostilities agreement signed in January. Speaking from an undisclosed location in the oil-rich Upper Nile region, his birthplace Machar summed up reasons that may have led to the collapse of the talks.
From the very start, it has been problematic. Even the agreement signed has not been affected. The political detainees, we still have four remaining being charged falsely that they have committed treason, while the rest have been released on bail, guarantees of Kenyan government. And government has been on the offensive since day one, carrying out operations against us. So it is not a wonder that there is slow progress.
Delegates from both warring sides have been meeting for months now in the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa, trying to peacefully resolve the crisis. South Sudan's Information Minister Michael Makuei said the talks are on the brink of failing. He blamed IGAD mediators for the breakdown of the talks, which had reached the second round.
This phase did not achieve the objective, and it was our hope that we would come back to our people with peace. But unfortunately, things did not go as planned, and this is not because of anything to do with the parties, but I strongly believe that it was the envoys, the negotiators, who became an obstacle other than the rebels with whom we went to negotiate.
The Addis Ababa talks were also attended by seven former political detainees who were flown in from Nairobi. The Kenyan government has granted them asylum. Makuei says the government delegation did not appreciate the presence of the politicians who had been detained for allegedly plotting to topple the Juba government.
We did not want them because, after all, they have not taken any arms. Not that only, but they claim to be SPLM. And if they are SPLM, then there are mechanisms for resolving issues within the SPLM. And if they are SPLM, then issues of SPLM are not discussed outside the country.
SPLM is the acronym of Sudan People's Liberation Movement. The political wing of the military outfit SPLA, Sudan People's Liberation Army. Fierce fighting in South Sudan has reportedly claimed the lives of more than 10,000 people. The United Nations estimates that nearly 4 million people are facing acute food shortage. More than 850,000 have been displaced. Toby Lancer, the UN Humanitarian Coordinator for South Sudan, painted a grim picture of Malakal, the capital of Upper Nile State.
This is a city that's deserted, a hospital in tatters. We've managed to go into the centre of town under extremely difficult and dangerous circumstances. At the moment, what we've got is a highly insecure environment in Malakal, and people were seeking protection and shelter with us. So we'll do the best we can to get them enough water, to get them enough food, to get them the medical attention that they require. And it's a terribly overcrowded setting. So what we're doing is developing a new site to decongest, to give people a bit more space.
Almost 150,000 people have sought refuge in the UN camp Lancer is referring to.
James Shimanyula reporting.
Opinion.
And for opinion, we go back to our top story. The return by a German medical school of 100-year-old remains of members of the Herero people to a delegation from Namibia. The ceremony was a reminder of Germany's colonial past and its brutal repression of an uprising. Our question for this week, how important is it for modern Germany to re-examine its colonial past in what was then German Southwest Africa? You can text us on +491609575910. Send an email to feedback.africa@dw.de or a letter to Africa Link DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. Our main stories. Germany's Charité Medical School has handed back to Namibia the remains of Herero people dating back to the days of German colonial rule. United Nations diplomats are to begin hammering out the details of a peacekeeping plan for the strife-torn Central African Republic. We've also been hearing about the latest setback in peace talks between the South Sudan government and rebels in Addis Ababa. Africa Link returns at the same time tomorrow. Do join us if you can. This is Mark Caldwell in Bonn.